It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Bill Hemmer.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm Juan Williams, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, February 28th, 2023. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Closer to discovering COVID's origins or just more confusion? A new report finds it is likely COVID came from a lab. But the agencies we have investigating COVID's origins are not in agreement.
This circumstantial evidence is so strong that I believe then, as I do now, that the benefit of the doubt should be in favor of the lab origin.
I'm Dave Anthony. He's a long shot in the race for president, a Republican who says we need a new leader.
The refusal of American politicians to directly confront our problems is what's leading to our demise, and it has to be arrested now. And the stealing from our children, like in Social Security, has to stop, and it has to stop now.
And I'm DeRoy Murdoch. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
The Wall Street Journal has reported that the Energy Department's concluded SARS-CoV-2 likely came from a lab, not from a wet market or from natural evolution within an animal host. This brings the Energy Department, with its host of scientists and laboratory experts, into line with the FBI, which also agrees with a lab leak theory.
I'm really sorry that the lab leak has become such a distraction for so many people, because frankly, we still don't know. There is no evidence really to say.
You said the overwhelming amount of evidence indicates that's a lab leak. I believe most card-carrying viral phylogenists and molecular virologists would disagree with you.
That was Francis Collins, the former director of the National Institutes of Health, and Dr. Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, earlier on in the pandemic. Other intelligence agencies and investigative bodies say they think the source is from nature, and still others, like the CIA, remain undecided. The Chinese government dismissed the Energy Department's conclusion, calling it a political smear. But there is a lab in that area of China where COVID was first detected, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where coronaviruses are studied, and no particular animal host has yet been identified. The White House National Security Council coordinator John Kirby said this report about the Department of Energy's findings does not end the debate here.
The president made trying to find the origins of COVID a priority right when he came into office, and he's got a whole of government effort designed to do that. There is not a consensus right now in the U.S. government about exactly how COVID started. There is just not an intelligence community consensus.
House Republicans say they want more information. Some have sent a letter to the National Institutes of Health asking for more data on research and biosafety at the Wuhan lab. Kirby notes that the president himself is the one who asked for intelligence agencies to increase their efforts to investigate the origins.
So the actual report, which is 5 pages long, is right now classified top secret SCI, secure compartmentalized information. So I don't have access to it.
Jamie Metzl is the founder of One Shared World and former World Health Organization Advisory Committee member on human genome editing.
But I've spoken with a number of people who have read it, who tell me, I mean, they can't say too much, but that it is significant. And my understanding is that the reason why it's a low level of confidence is not because of the quality of the additional information, it's the quantity. So as I understand it, there's additional information from people, but not enough people so that the DOE team that's working on this could determine that this is an absolute certainty. But I think it's very, very significant that they have shifted from we don't know, it's a jump ball, to we think it probably came from a lab. And when people think of the DOE, they may think of just regular energy issues, but the Department of Energy runs the U.S. national laboratories like the Lawrence Livermore National Lab and others. And so some of the top scientists in the world are employees of the DOE, and some right. of those scientists have actually worked on this issue.
Interesting. And thank you for explaining the significance of DOE there. Most agencies have not come to a conclusion whether this came out of natural evolution or was a lab leak, right? All the different agencies that have studied this. Mm-hmm. But it seems like the starting point for the lab theory is, okay, you've got Wuhan lab there. They study bat coronaviruses. And A small number of workers from that lab, according to U.S. intelligence, got sick enough in November of 2019 that they had to be hospitalized. I say that to lead up to this. Why were you so insistent that this was likely from a lab early on in the pandemic? And I ask that knowing that you served on the WHO Advisory Committee on Human Genome Editing, so you might know a thing or two.
Well, thank you for saying that. So in the earliest days of the pandemic, like everybody else, I was just kind of shocked about all the changes that were happening. I just dug in to say, what's going on? What can we learn? By the on January 24th of 2020, there was a report, a paper was released in the British medical journal, The Lancet, which showed that more than a third of the early cases of people infected with the SARS-CoV-2 virus had no exposure to the Huanan seafood market in Wuhan. So that made it pretty clear that this pandemic did not begin in the market. It started someplace else. What Wuhan had and has is China's first level four virology institute with the world's largest collection of coronaviruses that was doing very aggressive research, making these SARS-like viruses better able to infect human cells. When the SARS-CoV-2 virus jumps onto the scene in late 2019, it's already in many ways primed to infect humans, which is very different from what we might expect if it was just coming straight from the wild into a human population. And you have to ask the question, why Wuhan, as I said on my 60 Minutes interview with Leslie Stahl, quoting Rick from Casablanca, of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world, if there's a natural outbreak, maybe it happens somewhere in southern China, maybe in northern Laos, northern Burma. Why Wuhan of all of the places? And then we learned later that in March of 2018, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, along with EcoHealth Alliance and the University of North Carolina, had applied for a grant to DARPA, which is an arm of the U.S. Defense Department. And what they had proposed to do was to take SARS-like viruses and genetically engineer these furin cleavage sites, which is part of the spike protein, so that these SARS-like viruses would be better able to infect humanized mice, genetically engineered mice, or human cells in culture. And so this circumstantial evidence is so strong that I believe then, as I do now, that the benefit of the doubt should be in favor of the lab origin.
Well, let me ask you that, because that leads us to the next thing, and that is that Francis Collins, Dr. Fauci, others at NIH had said that the scientific evidence, looking at the genome, right, led them to lean in the direction, right, that it was natural evolution. And it does remind us that there were some scientists in touch with Dr. Fauci in the beginning of the pandemic, and this was released in emails later. Dr. Christian Anderson had written that some of the genetic features here in SARS-CoV-2 do look engineered, that he and other scientists all find the genome inconsistent with expectations from evolutionary theory. They later retracted that, said it did actually appear natural. And Francis Collins, at the time head of NIH, pointed to this study and said, you see, these outrageous claims that this was made in a lab are not true. Why was it so difficult to conclude from the people who were looking at the genetic structure? You're talking about evidence that's outside of, right, the actual virus itself, right? So, but we have all this other conversation happening about the virus itself.
Yeah, well, so I am talking also about the genetics of the virus, because when I mentioned that the virus was primed to infect humans and rodents, like laboratory mice, for example, better than it's able to infect bats and pangolins and anything else, that is a genetic argument based on the genetics. And so let me giving the benefit of the doubt to people like Christian Anderson and Michael Holmes and Bob Gary. What they, I believe, would say, or at least what they told David Quammen for his recently released book, is they thought it looked engineered, and then they saw information about the meta-analysis of these pangolin genomes, and that's what got them to change their mind. So those guys very rapidly changed their view. There are some people who say, well, this is evidence that there was some kind of conspiracy. I'm not able to speak on that. I kind of doubt it. But I do think there was a groupthink, and I do think it was very difficult for some of these people who had invested decades of their lives into building scientific collaborations with China, who'd invested decades of their lives in trying to prevent the next pandemic, to even consider the possibility that their work designed to prevent the next pandemic may have inadvertently contributed to the exact thing they had feared.
Wow. It seems like the information we have is very limited, right? As we know, China has not given access. So we don't really have like any whistleblowers here. We do know a former vice president at EcoHealth Alliance, that organization you referenced that got NIH funding to go work with the Wuhan lab. He said that EcoHealth did perform this gain of function research with Wuhan scientists to, he said, specifically create SARS-CoV-2. Of course, EcoHealth came back and said, this is all untrue. Everything he's saying is not true. Yeah. Either way, what should be the future then of medical research, either gain of function or working with other countries on medical research, if this is the outcome?
Two really important questions. First, international collaboration in science is absolutely essential. We are all beneficiaries of international collaboration. The key is, though, doing it safely. And part of doing it safely is just having transparency on what is being done, who is doing it, and under what conditions. And one of my critiques of the NIH funding is that we, the United States government, had no transparency, no knowledge of what work was actually being done at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And so I think we really need to be cautious, but it would be terrible if we threw away the baby with the bathwater, although I hate to use overused cliches like that. So we need international collaboration. It's just we need a lot of transparency and accountability. And then you mentioned gain of function research. One of the problems is that that is not a well-defined term. So there are certainly types of gain of function research on pathogens of pandemic potential that's actually really dangerous. And if somebody is going to make a case for doing it, it better be crystal clear what they're doing and why. But the science is moving very quickly. We don't yet have regulatory infrastructures on the, both the national and international level to handle all of this safely. And that's what we really need to step up our efforts.
If the Department of Energy, with all of their scientists and the FBI together, they say this really does look like it was made in a lab. But we have all these other agencies saying, you know, we can't conclude or it seems natural to us. How much should we take away from the Energy Department's conclusion? I mean, where are we left with now, right? That there are these competing theories still.
Sure. I think it's very meaningful. And so made in a lab is strong language because there are lots of ways you could have a lab accident that's not made in a lab. It could be that a researcher goes to southern China and gets infected in a cave. It could be that they're doing serial passage where they have a virus and they pass it through cell cultures or between animals. Or it could be genetic engineering, which we know they were doing at the Wuhan Institute of Virology to insert these receptor binding domains and furin cleavage sites into these SARS-like viruses. So I think it's obviously it's significant that the Department of Energy has changed its position because all of these intelligence agencies are very careful, particularly since the Iraq war, of communicating levels of certainty that they don't possess. But one of the reasons why I'm pushing so hard for further investigation, for a national COVID-19 commission, is it's really important to know how this terrible pandemic started, because that has to be a foundation of our efforts to prevent the next pandemic. So it's just not okay for us to throw up our arms and say, well, I guess China is blocking an investigation, so 15 million people are dead and we're not gonna try to understand why.
Jamie Metzl, thank you so much for your insight and your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
This is DeRoy Murdoch with your Fox News commentary coming up.
He may have legal issues and a lot of critics, But former President Trump remains the Republican frontrunner trying to return to the White House.
Joe Biden has put America on the fast track to ruin and destruction, and we will ensure that he does not receive four more years.
Donald Trump leads a new Fox News poll with the support of 43% of Republican voters. Ron DeSantis is 15 points back, though the Florida governor hasn't announced he's running. Nikki Haley's tied for third with former Vice President Mike Pence at 7% each. He also hasn't announced a campaign yet, but Haley has. The former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. tells Fox,
"Why not me? You know, I am the wife of a combat veteran. I'm a mother of two children, one who's getting married, and I see how hard it is for her to look at buying a home. One that's in college, and I see what he's dealing with woke education. You know, I'm the daughter of immigrant parents who are upset by what's happening at the border."
A conservative who's become a prominent anti-woke commentator is also in the race. Vivek Ramaswamy tells Fox,
"We have celebrated our diversity and our differences for so long that we forgot all of the ways we're really just the same as Americans, bound by a common set of ideals that set this nation into motion 250 years ago. And that's why I'm proud to say tonight that I am running for United States president to revive those ideals in this country."
Another Republican in the race is still trying to make a name for himself. Steve Laffey.
"I'm living in New Hampshire, and I'm not leaving till we get this thing settled, because the country just doesn't have much time."
Laffey is the former mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island.
"Running against the big shots. And that's what we're doing, because my website, stevelaffey.com, has complete solutions to fix this country. And the other candidates, they've got nothing. And if that's the way it's going to be, then I'm not going to go very far. But I think people are thirsting for someone who specifically says, here's what we're going to do about Social Security. Here's what we're going to do about the Federal Reserve so we don't have inflation. Here's what we're going to do about corruption, which is really the biggest thing happening in Washington Beltway. Laffey's right, is what people are going to say when I get through with them. And we've got to tell people that the debt is so big that it can't be the people who failed already. It can't be President Trump and his people like Pence and people who work for him. They had their chance. They ran up $8 trillion of debt in 4 years. As fiscal conservatives, do people remember when we went after Obama for $8 trillion of debt in 8 years? So the fiscal conservatives represent still, I don't know if it's 40 or 50% of the Republican Party, but that's where I'm coming from. And these are the problems we have to solve, because the refusal of American politicians to directly confront our problems is what's leading to our demise. And it has to be arrested now. And the stealing from our children, like in Social Security, has to stop, and it has to stop now.
But you have to get past something that the other candidates you talk about don't. Nobody knows who you are. Steve Laffey, you're starting off as a former mayor of a town in Rhode Island, a city in Rhode Island. How do you get over that, where people are like, I don't ever heard of that guy?
Well, you do it in New Hampshire. But yes, the hurdle is great. There's something called the internet. There's nationwide shows like this. And my website, Steve Laffey, and it's going to take months. I am specifically running because I have a unique background that can fix these problems. I have a unique background in education, for example. I'm a public school kid who went to Harvard Business School, who has six children. I've educated them in five different ways, including personally homeschooling them when my daughter, Sarah Grace Laffey, came down with stage four neuroblastoma cancer. I'm a financial expert who knows education and knows what to do about it, and will tell people the truth about it. What we have for the other people, if they want this, is you can have Republican governors who want to stop wokeness but give schools more money. That's wrong. You're going to have a former president and his people who did nothing when they were in office. Or you're going to have me, who knows that we got to get every kid out of the public schools that we can over the next 10 years. Every single kid, because it can't be fixed. And you're right. We've got a couple of hurdles to overcome. They're large ones. They are. But that's why I'm in New Hampshire. I'm not leaving. Because over a period of time, everybody will get to know me.
They'll also see, well, he ran for Senate Rhode Island, didn't have success. He ran for Congress in Colorado, didn't have success. When you look back 4 years ago, I know you're not a Democrat, and Pete Buttigieg is a Democrat, but he was an unknown mayor from Indiana who rose up in the campaign. Is there anything he did that you can try?
He didn't make it all the way, became the Secretary of Transportation. But so here's the difference. He was a terrible mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He's a terrible Secretary of Transportation. He's the worst of the worst.
I knew you wouldn't like his policies. I knew that.
I mean, no, he has a pre-programmed life. But the big difference is I actually get this stuff right. In other words, I've been right about this stuff. And that's the question for people. Do you want someone with my qualifications or do you want someone to placate you? I mean, listen, all these other people, I mean, if they're not promising a chicken in every pot, like Nikki Haley's announcement speech, they're just placating people. They don't have solutions. And so is the timing right is really the giant question for me. Are people feeling enough heat? And I'll tell you the statistic that really shocks me. 70% of Americans think the country's going in the wrong direction as unemployment hit 3.5%. That's never happened, Dave.
The very first thing on your list of issues on your webpage was fix Social Security. That is almost always very difficult for a candidate to sell because they get hit from all sides about touching the so-called third rail of politics. How do you get past that?
But you're talking to a financial expert businessman who takes the best practices. So the best practices from the world-renowned economist, Larry Kotlikoff, on Social Security. He's a senior professor at BU, right down the road here. And so that's the policy we want to do, because what does it do? It takes $61 trillion in unfunded liabilities and takes them to zero. What does it do for old people who are already retired? They get the same stuff. What does it do for someone who's 20? They go into a brand new program that they own, but they can't touch. And by the time they get to be 60, they're going to have way more money than the people who put all that money in and got very poor returns.
But what about the people who are 40 or 50?
People who are 40 or 50 will get what they would get out of Social Security from their last letter, and then they will enter the new system. And some people, 45 to 53 or whatever, could they get less? They could. But here's the difference with me. I tell you the truth. So you're right. I'm not just touching the third rail of politics. I run straight down the track. We're about to hit the rail of financial crisis. You thought 08 was bad when they bailed out the banks? It's nothing compared to what's about to happen. It's simple math, Dave. And every American seems to know it. That's why they think we're going in the wrong direction. And that's why they hate the government in Washington. And they want someone to lead.
All right. Now, the next thing is, you've talked a lot about fixing and dealing with our issues here. Anybody who's elected president has to deal with China, what's going on. Russia's in the middle of year number two of a war in Ukraine. And we have issues that go around the globe. So your background, how do you lead America as commander in chief when others like Nikki Haley, certainly incumbent President Biden, deal with foreign policy issues all the time?
Yeah, they deal with them fairly poorly, though. That's the problem. So Nikki Haley's, her big accomplishment is what? Go ask her when she comes on. She'll tell you she got America to withdraw from the Human Rights Council while she was ambassador to the UN. Really, Dave? That's an accomplishment? What we need is Cuba to get out of the Human Rights Council. What we need is for China and Russia to be off the Security Council, which takes a 65% vote. We need substantial things. The problem is the bar is set so low for politicians like the Fed, for example, or what happens in foreign policy. How great Mike Pompeo is going to announce. Is he going to tell you that he told Maduro to leave today in Venezuela and he didn't leave? No, he's not going to say that. He's going to write a book. This is the standard thing.
But they know all the players. They've been at like Pompeo or Haley or former President Trump.
How's that helped?
But they know all the people. You'd have to meet and get to know every single one of them, right? I mean, I'm not trying to say that you can't do the job. I'm asking how you tell people you can.
I have a very consistent foreign policy when it comes to communist China. I've been saying it since 2005. We have to stop trading with them over time. We had to stop it a long time ago. President Trump did literally nothing about it, with some tariffs on some goods, Section 301. What did anybody do about it? Listen, from 2005, do I have to meet this premier of China to know what needs to be done? Our middle class, watch my movie, Fixing America movie. Watch the trailer. I travel the country. I saw people suffering. It's far less important that I've met every single leader then I know what to do. And that's the real problem. The bar is so low. What about President Trump meeting with the guy who runs North Korea and stepping over the line? How did that work out? How'd that work? By the way, how'd that work out for Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton became president, hadn't met anybody, to my knowledge. And he didn't have a good foreign policy when it came to North Korea. He promised that they wouldn't get nuclear weapons. That was a lie. So the real problem in foreign policy is that we don't directly confront these problems. And I know how to do so.
So here we are. We're about to start March. The first Republican debate will be in August in Milwaukee. Look ahead. Where are you in your campaign, and will you be on the debate stage that day?
I hope to be on the debate stage that day. I we'll see what happens. I've got to do certain things by then, obviously. And I think what I provide, I know what I provide, is the ability to get things done. And what do the others do? They put them back in power. For example, the PPP program in corruption. How could anybody who voted for that and President Trump who signed off on it, now that it has 70,000 cases of fraud, how could anybody run for higher office? But they will. They're all okay. Mike Pence okayed it. He's going to run.
I mean, we were in the throes of COVID, right? So we were doing anything we could to help people.
No. And that was the wrong thing. The wrong thing. We should have had a Swedish model. I specifically said, and I have many tapes of saying, the president should only say people go to work. And that's what we should have done. And I was right. We could have taken care of old people, vastly overweight people, people like my daughter. I was on radio saying, you know, my daughter has stage 4 cancer. That's my problem. But we took $10 trillion. So the laziness of our federal government needs to stop. If you want it the same way, you're going to have 15 other candidates. If you want it to stop, you only got one. You got Steve Laffey, stevelaffey.com, driving down the Laffey Lane, and that's where I'm heading. So everybody pile on and let's go.
Steve Laffey, former mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island, now a Republican candidate for president. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Roy Murdoch. What's on your mind?
Imagine what Joe Biden or a future president of the United States would do if Chinese dictator Xi Jinping dispatched another spy balloon toward America and declared, quote, if America destroys our peace-loving balloon, we will have no choice but to suspend immediately and until further notice all U.S.-bound exports of Chinese-made antibiotics and antibiotic precursor chemicals. We eagerly await the White House's response, unquote. This chilling hypothetical and this month's all-too-real spy balloon fiasco should make it excruciatingly clear that America urgently needs to repatriate critical industries from China back to the USA. If, God forbid, the Chinese Communist Party attacked Taiwan, it's hard to imagine that Beijing would not use antibiotics and other vital drugs to extort U.S. neutrality while China conquers and communizes that nation. America could face this rotten choice. Defend Taiwan and, before long, watch helplessly as strep throat, gonorrhea, meningitis, and other bacterial infections went untreated, perhaps fatally so, or keep the life-sustaining antibiotics flowing as Beijing strangles Taipei. Letting the Chinese Communist Party crush its island neighbor would trample the Taiwan Relations Act, America's de facto commitment to the integrity of that prosperous free market constitutional republic. American military and diplomatic prestige would plunge even as atrocities and bloodshed in Taiwan soared. Healthcare expert Rosemary Gibson wrote about this frightful scenario in Market Watch. Quote, right now, the U.S. has virtually no capacity to manufacture antibiotics, Gibson observed. She continued, and I quote, that's because China currently controls roughly 90% of the global supply of inputs needed to make the generic antibiotics that treat bronchitis, pneumonia, pediatric ear infections, and life-threatening conditions such as sepsis, unquote. Congress should pass, and President Biden should sign, robust incentives to entice U.S. pharmaceutical, strategic mineral, and other concerns in China to come home. Specifically, eligible companies that repatriate their operations should face a federal corporate tax rate of 0% for the first 5 years after they leave communist China and return to the land of the brave. This massive shot in the arm would help lure these organizations back and entice them to erect U.S. facilities, employ American workers, etc. Similar incentives should be available to domestic startups and business expansions in this life and death sector. Democrats also must stop being bipolar about electric vehicles. In his recent State of the Union address, President Biden touted tax credits for the purchase of electric vehicles. The Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act overflows with EV subsidies. California, Oregon, and Washington have banned sales of new gasoline-powered cars as early as 2035. If the left insists on EVs, then why are they making it harder to build them? Democrats blocked the Twin Metals mine, home to 34% of U.S. copper, 88% of American cobalt, and 95% of domestic nickel reserves. Thanks to Team Biden, this all will remain underground. If Democrats shutter domestic sources for electric vehicle component minerals, where else would they be? China! A typical EV's 1,000-pound battery requires 25 pounds of lithium, 30 pounds of cobalt, 60 pounds of nickel, 90 pounds of copper, and 110 pounds of graphite. Naturally, China possesses or processes 60% of Earth's lithium, 80% of cobalt, 5% of nickel, 43% of copper, and up to 80% of graphite. It is theatrically absurd for Democrats to seal the mines whose contents compose the EVs that they insist Americans purchase. America must insource these life-saving, technology-driving materials before it's too late. If not, nosy balloons will be the least of our worries. I'm DeRoy Murdoch.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.